Hi, people. My name's James Smith. This is a town hall meeting. You know, you put your hands up, you catch the chair's eye, Mark Devenport, and you ask your question. Questions are not submitted in advance. There's no, you know, this is, you want to, if you want to ask it, you ask it. As he will explain, no doubt, in a minute. It's all about everybody who's got a question to ask. That's brilliant, you know. But you've also got to let everybody else have a chance as well. So make your question, get your answer. We're going to hope, perhaps, that the panel won't have too long answers, so that we'll get cover as much as possible. We've got the Minister of Education here, so I have no problems if there's a bias towards education in the question. That's your call, because it's your questions. This is East Belfast, and East Belfast is speaking out. It's not about us or anybody else. And without any further ado, I shall ask for the panel to take their seats, and could you welcome them in the time-honoured fashion as they enter the room.
Good evening, everybody. It's great to see such a great turnout. In case any of you caught the BBC News tonight, I had a report on it, so I was working quite late and didn't actually have much time to prepare for this. So I did a quick scoot on the internet, a quick search to try and get some biographical details together of the panellists. And quick Google search revealed that Sammy Douglas is a promising young linebacker for the Arlington US football team. John O'Dowd is a consultant spinal surgeon based in Harley Street in London. John Kyle was a 19th century Mississippi congressman. Chris Little is a retired American martial art expert and a former Ultimate Fighting champion. Michael Copeland, and this is actually somewhat like the real Michael Copeland, he is a former soldier, but he was also a serial killer in the 1960s.
It does cause some confusion.
Which shows that you shouldn't trust to Google just to do your research. Hopefully you all know what they really are, but running through it, John Kyle, Belfast councillor, former leader of the PUP. Also here to my left, Michael Copeland, former soldier of the Ulster Defence Regiment, former employee in the construction industry, and now an East Belfast MLA. Going over to the right, Chris Little, a former advisor for Naomi Long, and currently East Belfast MLA. Sammy Douglas, also an East Belfast MLA, and I think also, Sammy, an MBE. You have lots of M's, yes? Oh, as a long-term community worker in East Belfast, and John O'Dowd, who is said by various Lurgan restaurants to cook some very mean food there in his previous career, but is now, of course, Education Minister. You're all very welcome to East Belfast Speaks Out. Now, the organisers believe in not necessarily having this too structured, but instead allowing people to bring their views forward rather than writing down all your questions in advance. This does depend on you being lively and putting your hands up and making it clear that you want to get your voice heard. The theme of the evening is how responsive is the Assembly and the politicians to the real concerns of the voters, and this is obviously a chance not just to tell them that they're not, but also to tell them what your real concerns are. But we'll just trot through our guests and ask them to address our central theme, and then we'll get on with it. So, first of all, John Kyle, how responsive do you think Stormont is to the real concerns of the voters you meet out in the streets?
Well, I think Belfast City Council is much more responsive, and councillors are. But I think that certainly the impression is that Stormont is very hidebound by process, by ministers wanting to keep control of their departments, by internal negotiations. And it does mean that there are difficulties in actually getting enough mobility and flexibility and momentum to deal with some of the big issues. Now, that's not to say that they don't, but it's to say that the structures as they exist militate against rapid and active responses, against decisive leadership, and against tackling some of the more difficult and complex issues that really need to be dealt with. And I think particularly the issue of ministers being very protective of their areas and working at you know, what people talk about as the silo mentality, I think that is still prevalent, which is why I think that councillors and councillors are often much better positioned to act quickly and more responsively to issues that people face.
Okay, thanks, John Carr. Well, we have a minister, so let's bounce straight to the minister on that. Are you and your colleagues still guilty of having a silo mentality?
Well, there's an old saying that goes something along the lines of that the less you know about how sausages and laws are made, the happier you will be. And I unfortunately know a little bit about both. So the progress in the Assembly at times can be frustrating to the outside ward and indeed to those who are working within it. But we're under no illusions, the Assembly is fully functioning. We are creating new legislation. We are creating change in people's lives. And will there be a unanimous response to that? Of favouritism, of thanks? No, there won't be, nor should there be. Each individual in this room will have a different reflection on politicians and politics. But let's separate the both. Politics has to succeed in this society, and politics has to deliver in this society. Politicians are the mechanism upon which it delivers, and politicians can be changed. But let's not change the ideal of politics. That's the core reason why the Assembly is there. And yes, I think, and I include myself in this, through the journey, through the peace process, the establishment of the Assembly and the political structures, there has been a steep learning curve for many of us. Moving from opposition politics into government politics is a new dimension. But in terms of the role of the Assembly and councils, it should not be one or the other. The councils carry out a very important role. But councils deliver on the legislative basis which is created for them. The Assembly is there to create that legislative basis. So it should be certainly a responsive nature within the Assembly which allows the Council to act on the ground in a more responsive way.
Sammy Douglas, you made the transition from community worker to politician at a quite late stage after decades of work in the community. Do you think, as you now have the politician title attached to you, that your fellow politicians are out of touch with the people that you were dealing with for so long now?
Well, I suppose, Mark, I'm not a career politician, obviously, at my age, and I just was elected last May. But for me, there's no doubt, I mean, John has said, the Assembly's not perfect, far from it. But if we go back not so long ago, you know, when Northern Ireland was at war, and people like John and other people weren't talking to one another, that has totally changed. And I think, for me, one of the surprising things is that how well people get on, all the parties get on up there, outside of the odd bit of showboating, well, a fair bit of showboating at times, behind the scenes, and the cameras are not there, people get on very well. Because one of the things I have found is that the hours that all those MLAs work would surprise me very much. I think the other thing as well is that I enjoy working at the committees. I was at the committee today, social development, going through all the problems with welfare reform that was coming down the track. And it strikes me at this, in that it's not so long ago when we had direct rule ministers and I was sitting on the Newton Arch Road with Peter Robinson, politicians, community leaders, business people, and the news came on and it said that a direct rule minister had closed down the only training centre at East Belfast. Now, that wouldn't happen now, believe you me. I've been at meetings up at Stormont with people like Peter Robinson and others and community organisations, and I've said, you know, if you look at right across the United Kingdom, how many organisations can say, let's get up and have an opportunity to talk to the First Minister or MLAs or some of the other ministers? Warts and all, there's an access now that definitely wasn't there. So I'm upbeat about the Assembly, and I would have a lot of hopes and ambitions for it.
Michael Copeland, you've been in and out of Stormont.
Yes.
Do you think those who are in touch with those who are out?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't really see very much difference between the transitional assembly. The last thing I spoke on in the transitional assembly was underachievement in Protestant working class school children. And strangely enough, the first thing I spoke on after coming back, after being out for 4 years, was exactly the same thing, and not a great deal seemed to have changed in between. I think it's important to differentiate between the assembly and the executive. There is a difference between them. The executive is a distant place down in the castle that we don't see that often, but that's where the real guts and the power and the authority resides. If you're asking me, is the assembly responsive? I would have to say, without being churlish, it's better than what was there before, because there was nothing there before. It's potentially better than what's going, it's potentially not as good as what's going to come. It depends what you mean by responsive to people's needs, and the only way I can gauge people's needs is by the people that I see who come day and daily to our own office, and those issues are slightly different to what the perception of broad society would be, although perhaps we are insular. The one thing that I will say in defence of Sammy is I had noted that up until the beginning of last week we actually hadn't had any of the L word legislation, and then we got some in the form of the welfare reform, the welfare reform proposals, and I started to understand just what going through a bill means, and it's tedious and it's mind-numbing, and every paragraph I read I know that this will make life difficult for someone, and that is a very large responsibility if you see day and daily the people whose lives are going to be made difficult because of what you must do as opposed to what you want to do or choose to do.
Okay, thanks very much. Now, finally, at the end there, Chris Little, you've obviously worked in Naomi Long's office prior to becoming an MLA. Once you got there up to Stormont, did you feel that it was really addressing what the concerns were of people coming through the door in the office?
Well, Mark, I take on board some of the concerns that have been raised, and John Kyle's obviously defended the City Council ably this evening, but I think it's important that we use opportunities like this to tell local people about the work that we are doing on their behalf, and I've grown up very close by the school, and I'm proud to have this opportunity to serve local people in East Belfast. Today, for example, I got good news from a local resident that due to an Assembly Department for Social Development warm home scheme, that an older lady had a new central oil heating system installed in her house. I spoke with someone on an interface about 3G football pitches. Another local community is having a complete resurfacing of footpaths that was causing real problems for local older people, and I met with a local youth employment initiative. So they're obviously smaller, low-level issues to some people, but for me, I take great pride in being able to deliver on those types of issues. The Alliance Party also currently has the Ministries for Employment and Learning and Justice, and Ministry for Employment and Learning is dealing with employability schemes, further education, higher education, and the Ministry for Justice is delivering on important issues around the Youth Justice Review. So I certainly am enjoying being involved in delivering on those important issues, and I do believe that we can improve and that we can become much more responsive to local needs.
Okay, so thanks to all our panel members. This is the time when I start throwing this open to the audience for you to express your concerns and what you think of how the politicians are addressing them. First of all, sort of the lady over there. But if people just wait until they get a microphone before they ask their questions, then everyone will hear.
Hello, I have a question for Michael Copeland. You paint a pretty bleak picture there of passing legislation in Stormont, and you said the first thing you said was things hadn't changed much in the time you had been out of Stormont, and as far as educational underachievement for young males. What are you actually doing to help young males in East Belfast? I mean, is there a positive side to your work? Are you not going to be trying to actually change legislation and pass positive legislation that are going to change people's lives instead of passing things that you think are going to be damaging to people?
That's precisely my point. That in the 4 years that had elapsed between leaving and coming back, nothing really had changed. It's starting to move more rapidly now. A lot of the legislation that we deal with, and some will bear me out in this, is what's called statutory rules, where it's legislation which is enacted in Westminster and it comes here. And we basically get to go through it tediously, line by line, in the sure and certain knowledge that we cannot deviate from it because of something called parity. Parity is a very dangerous word, and there are certain political parties who are referring to testing parity. The problem is that in Westminster, they're going to test parity. They'll test parity with regional pay in the public sector, and they will test parity with regional benefits, which can be very, very dangerous if you pay the same amount of money in. In terms of working to try and help young people, a number of young people, in fact, a substantial number of young people do come to us. We try to get them on the training schemes. I try to get them involved in working outside the box by trying to develop their personalities. There's the Jerry Rogan Trust Initiative, for example, which just came my way today. The difficulty is that when you're one member of a party, it's how you bring forward. There's one thing which is very dear to my heart, which will be a private member's bill if I have anything to do with it. And it's a thing called early intervention in family law to prevent children becoming a tug-of-war item between parents in the event of family breakdown. One person can never attack a generational difficulty and the scale of it in East, but not just in East Belfast, but all over, where people grow up devoid of any hope. And it's difficult.
You wanted a quick comeback, yes, sir?
That's the difficulty.
Just on that point, I mean, we've got the Education Minister here. Educational underachievement, especially amongst young males in this part of the world, what are you doing to address that?
There's a number of avenues of attack against this, and some of them will take generational change. In terms of educational underachievement in males and young Protestant males, but let's look at the area in males, then we'll return to a specific subject. That is not unique to urban centres in these islands. But there is a certain dimension within Protestant young males that I think takes specific attention, that will also can be dealt with through broader policies. And I set out in September that I want to radically overhaul education, but we do not need new policies to do that. We have to implement the policies we have in place, and we have to be radical about it. We have to challenge underattainment, and that also includes challenging schools who are allowing our young people to leave school without the proper qualifications. And that is going to be a challenge, not just for me as Minister, but also for local MLAs. I have MLAs coming lobbying me to keep schools open, and when I show them the educational attainment in those schools and ask them, are you prepared to put another generation of young people through that school? They look at you with a blank expression, but. Now, I have a responsibility to make sure schools are properly resourced. I have a responsibility to make sure that there's sufficient staff in place, and all the educational budget pressures bearing down on us make that very difficult. But there are centres of educational excellence in working-class communities throughout Belfast and across the north, which shows that it can be done and is being done. So if schools are failing and they can't show a plan to return that failing round, then they deserve to be challenged. In terms of education, I'll just finish this through. This point. Educational attainment is broken down into two factors, what you achieve in the school and what you achieve in the community. And all the reports show that 20% of educational attainment is in the school, 80% is in the family home, in the community, and the aspirations which are around you. I intend to launch a project now of community engagement, community involvement, and something similar to the Public Health Agency, where we have tackled ill health at cause. I'm now going to go out and tackle educational underattainment at cause and give those communities that have been divorced for education for whatever reason the ability to start building back up towards and saying education is a gift and we should cherish it.
I want to get a few more questions in from the floor. First of all, the gentleman in the blue top.
Hi, yes, thanks. I was just going to ask, you were talking there about, Mr Copeland, about life being made more difficult by the welfare reform bill and also about talking about the difficulties for young people in education. One issue that's raised by my organisation, Include Youth, is about education maintenance allowance. We run a pre-vocational scheme for young people who aren't ready for mainstream training schemes, don't have the qualifications to stay on further education. But they currently don't receive education maintenance allowance, which makes it much more difficult for them to stay on in education and improve their chances of getting trained and ultimately getting a job, and more or less leaves them at the bottom level. So they can't actually move up anymore. So what could be done about that? With
a brief one, maybe. Chris Little, do you want to chime in on that? Because some of that comes under Dell, doesn't it? Which, for a short while, your party colleague will continue to hold on to.
He's doing a good job, yeah. No, I appreciate the question. I'm a member of the Employment and Learning Committee at the Assembly, and we have drafted a motion to take forward to the Assembly on Monday to debate the issue of educational maintenance allowance and the issue of young people not in employment, education and training. We've heard from Include Youth at the committee by way of evidence as well, and the NEATS strategy that we worked on previously identified the importance of targeting EMA effectively. I met with GRIT today myself as well, and it's clear that pre-vocational schemes, ensuring young people are ready to take advantage of apprenticeship opportunities, training opportunities, are crucial, and hopefully you'll see some positive contribution in that debate on Monday.
I'm going to ask for a question from the man in the front here. If people can bear with me, there's lots of people who have been putting their hands up. We'll just wait until the microphone reaches this man, and then we'll try and bounce to some others.
Arthur Atchison, I'm a resident in East Belfast. There were discussions this morning at Belfast City Council's investment strategy launch, which mentioned a new vocational college partnership in East Belfast, which would be of great interest to me to learn a little bit more about that, if anybody knows about it, please.
Well, John Carl, do you know anything on that aspect or not?
I know something about it, Mark. One of the problems, as we're all aware of, is that young people in school who are not academically gifted reach the school leaving age. They leave school and there's very little for them to do. One of the problems has been that even in vocational courses in tertiary education, for a young man, say, who's training as a plasterer, for his work experience, he has to find a business who will take him on as an apprentice. Now, for a young man who comes from a home where perhaps there's been no employment for the past 20 years, that becomes a huge mountain to climb. And the odds are immediately stacked against him completing his apprenticeship and finding employment. So the idea of a vocational college is again, to pull together the different agencies and the different interested bodies to create a college which can give young people an authentic, reliable, effective vocational training that will equip them for work and that will hopefully then lead them into effective employment. Now, this morning in the Belfast City Council's... Mark, forgive me if I just...
I was just going to ask clarification. How will it be different, say, to the new college of the Titanic Quarter?
Well, this morning in Belfast City Council's launch, one of the points that was made that was that there was a deliberate decision by the council to, first of all, create apprenticeship opportunities, work experience opportunities, and employment opportunities within the investment brief that they've developed. furthermore, whenever City Council is inviting tenders for work, they want those tenders to include social clauses whereby people who are long-term unemployed and young people who have not yet had employment can be guaranteed a certain number of jobs. So the plan in the investment programme is to pump prime employment by providing some work for young people and for long-term unemployed. Now, again, the vocational college is pulling together different agencies and people who are scattered and are doing a little bit here and there to try and help unemployed, but to try and give it a more coordinated and more effective offering to bring young people in.
Okay. Sorry, a gentleman over there has had his hand up for quite a long time.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for the opportunity. My question is simple. I would like to know where the £5,000 went. I think you know what I'm on about. The £5,000 that Aris Robson took as a gift or a bribe or whatever. The people of this country have never... This question has never been answered. There's never been an honest answer to this. Do you know that Aris Robson walked away without all this, without even a scolding? £800 a week pension for the rest of her days for working for 7 years? It's not bad. You all look after yourselves. You may be asking yourselves, if Aris is getting this, why has Sinn Féin been so quiet? It's very simple. They're all at it. They're all claiming for apartments in London and they never even sat in a house. Nice wee jobs for their mates. 60,000 a year, lovely. And taking half of it back. £1,400 dollar a night hotels, £200 a head meals and terrestrials. Who do you think you are? Catch a grip of yourselves. There's not one of you speak for the poor of this country. Not one of you. You're too busy living a high life, living like parasites and all that. And I'm here to tell you, I represent the Occupy movement, the fastest growing movement the world's ever seen, faster than Christianity, communism, anything else. And we are here at 1,300 cities around the world. 1,300 cities. Look at the political parties around the world at the minute. The USA Republicans, the Democrats, it's the same old shit. Liberals, okay. Labour, Fianna Fáil, Fianna Gael, Sinn Féin, DUP, they're all the same. There's no effective opposition anywhere in the world.
I'll tell you what, we've had a great question, but we don't want a big speech, so okay?
If you people want to know what's going on in the world, switch off your TV and switch on the internet.
Okay. Do you want to get an answer to your point?
This is what democracy looks like.
Okay.
Not what you're giving us. 45,000 people sitting in the back. Like, a lot of people.
Democracy is not a monologue. Okay, so Sammy Douglas. Well, carry on, sir. That's okay. Sammy Douglas, you want to respond to the point that was being made there?
Okay, let me just...
Well, you could be part of a dialogue, but you can't be part of a monologue. I'm not here to chair a monologue, sir. Okay, you're stopping the lady over here getting her voice heard. Come on. Okay, right.
Mark, do you want me to respond to that, dear? Mark?
Right, hang on, I'll come back in a moment.
I think I have a slightly different perspective on the same issue. My name's Jenny Muir. I'm an East Belfast resident, and I'm a member of the Labour Party.
Fair enough.
And I have a blog
but
called East
just
Belfast.
Just don't make
Diary.
A speech.
No, and I'm not going to make a speech. We're talking here about the real concerns of voters, and is the Assembly meeting the real concerns of voters? Isn't it time that our party system and our party politics was based on the social and economic issues that we all care about, rather than on attitudes towards the border? And if that were the case, would we not have better decision-making up on the Hill?
Okay. I don't want to totally ignore the point, though, because there were some serious points being made there. So, Sammy Douglas, reply first of all to the charge of DUP being parasites, and then maybe to the more general point about left-right politics.
Well, it's interesting. I've been involved in East Belfast for 25 years. I've been working down the interface. I've been working with young people, unemployed people, elderly, a whole range of people. I haven't seen you at one meeting, to be honest. So you come along here and give us great. Just say next time a bit of time, man. I'll give you a ring and you can come out and get involved in some of those projects. So I think the other thing as well. You made an allegation about a woman who has mental health problems at the moment. A woman. So let's take under consideration. I have mental health in my own family. Okay. That person from the airport, a very good question. I opened up an office there on Newton Orange Road, right at D Street, and I have people come into my office every day. Not one person has mentioned to me about the border, but they've been today about debt, about housing, about their children, about their families, all the real issues. And I think that one of the things about the Assembly that I think is good is that we're now starting to discuss and trying to deal with those bread and butter issues. Because I'm from working class background, and I'm glad that the likes of the DUP voted with Labour last night in terms of the amendment at Westminster.
There's a gentleman in the back whose arm has been hurting. He's had it for about half an hour, so I'm going to ask him to come in.
Okay.